And good morning. Welcome to another edition of Health Essentials. Oh yeah, that's better. I've got to turn the volume up just a little bit more. Okay. This program is called Health Essentials. Let me think. There may be some people that are actually quite interested in taking care of their bodies. And so if their body is not in great working order, they want to find a way to get it back in good working order. All right, let's get started here. The number here at the station is 903-586-5257 if you want to call and ask me a question. Otherwise, I was going to tell you this. Yesterday, I had a very interesting lady come to see me, and she's been doing ultrasounds, to scan organs and such and other issues for like 30 years. She's very close to retirement, but she was just saying in passing, I asked her, I said, how many fatty livers have you seen today? She said, well, I saw seven people this morning. I saw seven fatty livers in a row, and I thought to myself, really? Well, obviously, I mean, I don't want to overthink it, but probably the healthiest, most normal people of all time, they're probably not going to get ultrasounds of their internal organs. So probably someone that feels like $1 million is not going to say, hey, could you do an ultrasound of my liver and gallbladder and bile duct and pancreas and kidneys and everything else? They're just not going to do that. So it just kind of makes sense that she's going to see people that have health problems, but the first seven people that she images all have a fatty liver? Really? Okay. Have an article for you. We talked about a lot of stuff yesterday. Some of this I just find so interesting and so intriguing, and it just very much fascinates me, the information that just about anybody can get their hands on if they want. I guess what it is comes down to, it's a matter of what you think about the information you read. You kind of evaluate it and say, well, is this true or is it not true? But let me read this to you right here. To me, this is very, very interesting. So just food for thought. Maybe this doesn't relate to you at all. Or maybe you should consider if it can cause this to children or cause these problems with a child, what could it do to an adult? All right, there is a condition called autism spectrum disorder. Okay, it is characterized by persistent deficits in social communication and interaction and a restrictive repetitive patterns of behavior, interest, or activities. I bet you anything, you know somebody that has autism. It says these symptoms produce clinically significant developmental impairment. The CDC, which is just short for Centers for Disease Control, estimates that autism spectral disorder occurs in one of every 68 children in the U.S., while the National Health Interview Survey puts the estimate higher. One out of every 45, aged 3 to 17 years, are the ones affected the most. A subset of children with autism spectral disorder undergo a period of apparently normal development followed by regression in development. The lady I was just referring to, the one that does the ultrasound imaging of organs and organ systems and structures related to improving their health, she was telling me her next-door neighbor has a child that has autism, and the parents said it only happened after the child received a vaccine. Well, personally, I'm not going to argue with that. You might argue with that, but I'm not, because I believe the mother. All right. A subset of children with autism spectral disorder undergo a period of apparently normal development. That means the child was normal. And then all of a sudden, their fortunes change for the worse, and they start having all these emotional and social and interaction issues. It says, since these children did not initially manifest autism, researchers suggest that they may have been influenced by drugs or other environmental exposures. So, pray tell, what could that be? What could the child have come in contact with that could have caused the child to go from normal brain development, social interaction, to not so great? Here it is. The researchers found an increased likelihood for autism from childhood acetaminophen use. which was higher in children with regression. That means going backwards. Do you know what acetaminophen is? That's Tylenol. Yes, I understand. I'm with you on that. You'll get no disagreement from me if a child has a bad fever. I mean, you can go into the grocery store or any pharmacy and look on the shelf, and you can find out real quick a lot of these child formulations to help ease horrible symptoms of a child that's vomiting with diarrhea or has a fever or aches and pains or doesn't feel well. It's just all Tylenol. Yeah, I know it works. But my point is there a price to be paid for taking it? This is what they say right here. And to me, this is very fascinating. They theorize that acetaminophen, or Tylenol, may cause disruption of the endocannabinoid system. And it may underlie some of this increased likelihood. So we have an endocannabinoid system within the body. It has to do with brain communication. Of course, this is particularly in children with genetically compromised primary conjugate pathways that normally metabolize the drug. Folks, that's just a real fancy terminology for once you put Tylenol in your body, whether you're a little baby or you're a full-grown adult, your liver's got to kick it into high gear, folks. And it's got to be able to detoxify and break it down, because if it does not do that, then you will have toxic side effects. So, I just kind of wonder myself, how many people really understand what that means? I mean, if you read something or you hear something and you don't have an understanding of what that means, well then, you know how we are as human beings. Well, if you don't understand something, you tend to kind of push it to the side. Not that we're trying to be dismissive, but if you don't fully understand something, how are you supposed to process that information? It has now been shown that acetaminophen produces analgesia by acting in the brain as an indirect agonist at the cannabinoid receptors and inhibiting reuptake of anandamide. I'm probably pronouncing that wrong. It says blocking cannabinoid receptors completely eliminates the analgesic effect of acetaminophen. I know that's a bunch of gobbledygook, but let me say this right here. Whether you're 99 years old or 9 days old, you put acetaminophen or Tylenol in your body, what's going to happen? Your liver is going to kick it into high gear and try to break it down, because potentially it could poison you or kill you. And your body can't allow that, so it's got to detoxify. It's got to break it down. It's got to convert it into something else. Well, you've probably heard me say before that the most potent antioxidant that's made by the human body is called glutathione. And glutathione is just very, very interesting to me. It's a peptide, which means it's made from protein. But not just any protein. It's made from proteins that contain sulfur. And sometimes we don't spend enough time talking about sulfur. Maybe we should talk about sulfur more. But if your body is going to neutralize acetaminophen, it might have to give up its glutathione in order to do that. And antioxidants are the very things that protect your body against damage. You know, what is the difference between two people? One person consumes alcohol and it doesn't destroy them. Another person consumes alcohol and it does. Well, it may be the reserve of glutathione or their ability to produce glutathione within your liver that can make all the difference. Anyway, to make a long story short, just about every substance that you and I could think of. What if you said cyanide, strychnine? What is the old killer they used to slip into a glass of wine? Was that called hemlock? Yeah, hemlock. I read one time that they used to, I'm just going to say a meadowlark, because I like the Harlem Globetrotters, but meadowlarks used to feed on hemlock. And people knew this, so what they would do is they would take meadowlarks and they would serve them to people that they wanted to do in, because it's a poison. So the more free radicals that a substance contains, the more poisonous it is. Are you with me on that? So what we have here is, if you want to kill somebody, you give them something that's very, very poisonous that has a lot of free radicals. Well, the exact polar opposite of that would be antioxidant or anti-free radicals. And so that's one thing that Tylenol has been shown to do. It totally depletes the glutathione levels. So we could probably devote a whole program just talking about glutathione. It's one of the reasons why it's good to not eat high amounts of carbohydrates. Because when you burn them up in the body for fuel, man, do they give off free radicals. It's almost like taking in poison. Maybe it is. Anyway, this is just one article that I've read over the years about the use of Tylenol and the occurrence of either kids developing asthma or behavioral problems or learning problems or learning disabilities or dyslexia. If you want to say my child does not have autism, he has Asperger's or she has Asperger's, well, I would say that's a milder version, but still nonetheless, you're just like me. You want your child to be able to grow up in a toxic world and be able to navigate and have a great skill set, but you want them to be spiritual and mental and emotional beings that can use all their faculties and skill sets to bless one another and bless God in heaven above. Anyway, one of the articles that I read a couple years ago demonstrated that the more Tylenol that a mother consumes while she's pregnant, the much greater the risk of the child having a tremendous learning disability. Anyway, that's just food for thought. Obviously, I'm not trying to be critical. I'm just kind of stating, because if you haven't heard this information, it might be beneficial. Good morning, and welcome to the program.
Good morning, sir. The old dinosaur here.
The Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Yes, sir. I have a couple of little problems here I'd like to discuss with you.
All right, let's have at it.
Okay. I continue to have Parkinson-like problems, and I'm not sure that I have Parkinson's, but I do have the shakes really bad.
There's a book called The Brain's Way of Healing, and in the book there's a chapter devoted to I think it's Dr. Norman Doidge, if I'm saying his name right. There's a chapter devoted to one particular man that was able to completely reverse his Parkinson's that he developed very, very early in life. So you might want to read that.
Okay, The Brain's Way of Healing by
Norman, and I think the last name is Doidge. It's almost like Dodge, but with an I in front of the D, I think.
Okay.
But it should be really easy to find, like on Amazon or the internet.
I see. Also, my PSA is going up like a rocket. And I'm taking various and sundry concoctions, but it's still up around 4-something.
Okay. One of the articles that I have in front of me, I haven't got to it yet, but I'll just go ahead and share it with you right now. They gave men with high PSAs, they gave them mushroom extracts, and it caused a significant number of them to return to unmeasurable amounts. So let me see if I can find that real quick. That way you can look it up if you want to. I'm almost there. Okay. It comes from the journal Cancer. Anyway.
Journal?
Well, yes, but it's just going to... I can tell you the title of the article. It's called A Phase 1 Trial of Mushroom Powder in Patients with Biochemically Recurrent Prostate Cancer. And do you have a pen handy?
I do.
Okay. There are several types of mushrooms. No, actually, let me just cover the simple one, because you can buy these anywhere. They're called white button mushrooms.
White button...
Yeah, like you got a button on your shirt, or there's a button on your trousers, or there's a button on your holster. That didn't even make sense. Never mind. But they're called white button mushrooms.
Right. I've got it.
Got good deal. So, I mean, that can be helpful. One of the studies that I do think of, and this is probably 15 years old, but it was a rather large study that took place in Canada. Now, if I say Canada, does that mean the study's not valid because they're Canadians?
I guess not. I think a lot of things good come from Canada.
You're right. I'm only joking. But they showed that the less carbohydrates or the lower the sugar levels, that's where you have the best improvement.
sugar is my enemy anyway.
Yeah, you're right about that. There's a book called The 100-Year Lie. I think I bought it at half-price books probably 6 or 7 years ago, but to me it's intriguing. But I remember the man went to speak to a Parkinson's support group, and he got up and he said, okay, I think this was in California, but he said, I want everyone to raise their hand. Who ate a ton of junk food when they were younger? And every hand went up. I mean, the people that had Parkinson's.
Okay.
So I don't think there's a problem if you decide to eat blueberries or raspberries or cherries or, you know, natural forms of sugar that way. That shouldn't be a problem.
No, it shouldn't.
All you got to do is just adjust your mind like, oh, these are the most delicious strawberries I've ever had in my life. This is so much better than eating a Ding Dong or a Twinkie.
I 100% agree. I'm still ingesting a lot of raw milk and kefir. And
well, that's probably one thing if it were me I'd cut out. Let me just explain why. And I know I'm going to go overboard, but just be patient with me. Do you remember when you and I were little kids on the playground, they used to have seesaws, or if you want to call them a teeter-totter, you know what that is.
Yes, I do.
They probably have been outlawed, because I remember several occasions, the two bullies that were in my class at Joe Lawrence Elementary School in Mesquite, Texas, they probably, their greatest pleasure was getting me to up on the top of it, and they refused to let me down. And it was like playing a game of Buck and Brock, you know, buck you off the horse. So I learned to hang on for dear life. But anyway, at one end of the seesaw, and this is just an analogy, we have the hormone that's called insulin. At the other end of the seesaw, we have a hormone called growth hormone. Now, growth hormone, now that's what you want right there. That's exactly what you want to be accentuated or improved upon. You want growth hormone. But what happens is, growth hormone cannot go up if insulin is going up. And so going back to dairy just for a second, there is one compound in dairy that, and I have nothing to do with it, it's called IGF-1 or insulin growth factor 1. A lot of the studies that I've done on cancer or looking at the research, if you want cancer to grow very, very rapidly, then one of the hallmarks is they usually find a lot of IGF-1 or insulin growth factor 1, and that's found in milk. And so if your PSA is going up, I would say what we need to do is probably cut out all the dairy products. Just focus on eating clean. See, you could get growth hormone to go up just by eating sardines and good high-quality seafood. When's the last time you've been fishing in the Pacific Ocean?
Never have.
I think if you went, there might be some opportunity to pick up a little bit of radiation from that Japanese nuclear reactor that blew up. I shouldn't say blow up. I meant leaking. That's probably more precise.
Yes.
But if you could find clean seafood, that is one of high-quality natural proteins that God has made are probably very, very good for helping aid the body and increasing the manifestation or the production of human growth hormone. Basically, anything that you want repaired in the body, oh boy, growth hormone has a good influence on that.
Okay.
I read the other day, and I won't mention the guy's name, but a very, very famous Hollywood actor. He's been around a long time. You would know him, especially if I started humming dun 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 dun. But anyway, he was detained at the airport in Sydney, Australia, because he had an unreal amount of these vials of human growth hormone, which is illegal for him to have. But he had it anyway. And I would imagine, I don't want to like try to read the guy's mind, but he's probably using this as the fountain of youth. Probably just injecting himself, make sure his muscles stay big and he doesn't age. I know that's not going to happen, but I mean, everybody ages, right?
That's right.
But if you want your PSA to go down, you want the Parkinson's to do better, I probably would not drink dairy products. At least just put it to the test and try that. Now, have you ever heard of a ketogenic diet?
Yes, I have.
I think you ought to just kind of play with that idea, and you can kind of cycle in and out of it as you want to. I don't want to be ultra-restrictive. because I see great results even if people kind of wax and wane in and out of it. So you really need to probably take a look at that right there. What else would you like me to help you with?
I guess that's about it. The human growth hormone, lots of seafood. I do ingest a lot of eggs.
Good. I'll call that a high quality food.
With a lot of butter.
You know, it's easy for me to read studies. It's another thing to get people to do what I read. But I can tell you, men that use saunas very frequently, that's one of the greatest ways to increase human growth hormone, the use of a sauna.
Do they have to get the temperature up to 180 or 190 or 200?
Well, those are for the crazy people like me that would be willing to try something like that. But even exercising to the point where you break a sweat or you start to begin the process of sweating, that has been shown to enhance human growth hormone production. So a low-carbohydrate diet, well, that causes insulin to go down, and so growth hormone goes up. Or, if I said it differently, the less sugar you eat, the more growth hormone you're going to have. I think that's true. When you eat quality protein like eggs, boy, that stuff helps. Now, personally, I'm in my 50s. I have just not grown tired or weary of eating eggs. I just haven't. I love them. I haven't had anything for breakfast right now, and I'm already fantasizing about two eggs over easy.
I'm thinking about five eggs scrambled in butter.
That's because you think bigger than I do.
Yes. Keep away from the raw dairy products.
I'm not against raw dairy products at all, but I think under these circumstances, raw dairy products are going to contain what's called insulin growth factor 1. I just don't think there's anybody that can argue around that one. And I'm just trying to be honest and straightforward with you. I'm not trying to disturb you or bring you down.
The sauna at the gym that I go to will only get up to about 170, 180.
Oh, that's no problem there. And I can tell you, if you start looking up studies on the use of a sauna and human growth hormone expression, you're going to be really impressed. I know a sauna's not free, but I mean, can you survive it for a little bit?
Oh, a long time.
Oh, do you like it?
I'm not enthralled with it, but I can live with it.
The other thing I need to bring up is men that don't feel great, usually they're allergic to firearms. So I'm suggesting that you ship them all to Texas. I know of a young man that would take them off your hands.
I bet you do.
So I just want you to ponder that in your heart. And if you're really serious about getting well, you'll just get rid of all of them right now.
Well, I have gotten rid of all of them except the ones that I use. I've actually given all of my stuff away.
Oh, good answer. Well, hey, thanks a bunch. Enjoyed visiting with you.
Thank you, sir.
Take care. What time is it in California right now?
0500 plus.
Okay, gotcha.
523.
Okay, 0523. Gotcha. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. I can only imagine if you're listening to us talk about 160 or 70 degrees on a Santa sauna, you're probably going, are you nuts? 903-586-5257. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. I have a question for you that I don't remember that you have talked about before.
I probably have never heard it before.
There are times when you need to get an antibiotic for different things.
Of course there is, yeah.
A urinary tract infection, is that something that is an antibiotic is needed for?
It sure can be, and I'm going to say maybe about 2 months ago I was reading it's called WHO, that stands for World Health Organization.
Okay.
They are the medical arm of the United Nations, which I know you're a big fan of.
Oh, yes.
I mean, haven't you told me in the past that you send a donation check to them frequently? Okay, anyway, moving right along. But they were covering what are the top 10 bacteria that have proven to be the thorn in the flesh or the nemesis of the medical profession or the health of the world. And we're just talking about antibiotic-resistant bacteria. Mm-hmm. But I can tell you that I think the first one was called Enterobacter, and then the next one was called Pseudomonas. Have you ever heard the term Pseudomonas?
No.
Well, guess where it likes to grow? In when it's a nice, moist, wet, warm environment called the urinary tract.
Hmm.
And so, but they're really concerned because all over the globe right now, we've got all these germs that are becoming extremely resistant to urinary tract infections. So I don't know if I'm going to answer your question the way that you want me to answer it, but I'm going to answer it the way that I want to answer it, okay?
Okay.
All right, for example, there's a concept in medicine called drainage. So if you went to the dentist and he said, ma'am, your tooth is draining, there's a little bit of pus coming out of it, but it's coming out, that's a good sign. Mm-hmm. And he might say, let's just watch it drain. And so your immune system's actually trying to rise to the occasion and fight that dental infection. And there's lots of times the body can just completely overcome.
Okay.
I think you've heard me say before that my father-in-law, my dear, sweet father-in-law, mm-hmm. has been a dentist for just about forever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, since recorded time, I think. I mean, stone tablets, the papyrus, does that mean anything? But anyway, but he's used clove oil forever and a day to treat some of those issues, and he's a dentist.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, but yes, there is a time and a place for antibiotic therapy. Now, what I was kind of building toward, there is a concept called drainage.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, if you had a boil coming up on your skin, wouldn't you want that just to go ahead and come on up to the surface and burst forth and
right.
resolve itself? You don't want that to stay in there and just hurt all the time and get bigger like the size of a watermelon on the side of the head? No. But you want drainage, and one of my favorite drainage remedies for the kidneys and the bladder is called garlic.
Garlic, okay.
And I'm going to tell you a story that's going to be unbelievable because it just happened yesterday. You're not going to believe me, but I'm going to tell you anyway. A woman calls me on the phone. She says, I've got urinary tract infection. It's horrible. I hate the antibiotics. What can I do? And over the phone, I said, why don't you just consider garlic as a drainage remedy? And so what happened was she came by my office and she told me something very bizarre. She said, you're not going to believe this, but I'm actually better today since I took the garlic yesterday. And I'm going, that is strange. You mean it can really work that fast? Mm. Anyway, but garlic is one of my favorites for helping to promote drainage of the kidneys and the bladder.
Is that garlic in, like, the capsule form?
It's going to have to be something like that because okay. anytime that you cook garlic, it seems to inactivate very, very efficiently those active sulfur-bearing molecules okay. that really have all the great medicinal qualities. Have you ever heard garlic called, have you ever heard the term Russian penicillin when they're referring to garlic instead of
no.
penicillin? Well, I just think it's kind of a cool idea, but if you start looking at the research on the garlic and the use of infections, it's very, very, it can be very effective. Where,
okay.
And the other point I'm getting to is, while all these germs that you and I may encounter over the course of our lifetime, they're becoming more and more resistant to antibiotics, well, they haven't become resistant to garlic for some strange reason.
Hmm.
And they haven't become resistant to what I would call colloidal silver.
Okay, colloidal.
The things that I'm usually after is I'm trying to drastically increase immune activity in the bladder and the kidneys. But let me give you one simple point. This is not going to be a real pretty study that I'm going to quote from my memory, but I'm going to do it anyway. I hope you're not eating breakfast right now.
No.
Okay, good. We're clear. They have done experiments, and I would say probably a full 95% of all urinary tract infections are due to one little wicked bug called Escherichia coli. Sometimes it's called mm-hmm. E. coli for short. You've heard of that, right?
Right, right.
Okay. So it's going to be a matter of if the conditions are right for it to take over, it's going to take over. So what is the number one predictable value for determining who's going to have the most infections? It's going to be the amount of sugar they consume. I didn't try to make a panacea conversation out of that. I'm just telling you it's a factor.
Right.
So if you told me you have a urinary tract infection, it may not be the best day to eat 20 pounds of cotton candy.
Oh, okay.
I'm sure you knew that. But in this
okay.
one study, they took women and they took a little bitty loop with E. coli on the end of it, and they actually inserted it through the urethra into the female bladder that had urine in it, and they kind of shook it around to help disperse the E. coli. You're just trying to guarantee that E. coli takes over the bladder. Now, I don't know about you, but I am not going to volunteer for a study like that.
No.
I mean, how much would they have to pay you to say, we want to give you a wicked E. coli infection, what's your price?
No, thank you.
Yeah, no thank you's right. I mean, that's just, but they've done these, so who knows, maybe somebody's desperate for money. But anyway, they found out that women that just kind of held it in and they just did whatever they wanted to, the infection took hold. But the other women, they were instructed to do one technique or one, this is just a simple idea. They said, all right, when you go to the bathroom to pass your urine, we want you to bear down extra hard to really flush this stuff out very, very efficiently. And they said, okay, we'll do it. None of them got infections. And so if you have an infection of any kind, yes, it's a great idea to drink water and plenty of it.
Okay.
You know what I'm a fan of besides garlic? I just love the idea of, unprocessed cranberry juice. See, I'm not responsible for this, but mm-hmm. God, in his tremendous wisdom, I should say Jesus Christ, he designed a molecule or a sugar found in cranberries in high concentration called D-ribose. Do you think it's just by happenstance that cranberry tends to be a more efficient remedy for urinary tract? No, it's perfect. And D-ribose helps prevent E. coli from attaching to the wall of the bladder, which is usually okay. Slick as glass. So if you bear down with extra force, if you have, and I actually like cranberry powder in capsules.
Okay.
I think other people listening right now are saying, can we just use Ocean Spray cranberry juice? Because that really tastes good. I'm going, no. Might have a little bit of sugar in it there.
Okay. Yes, yes, yes.
But some of the things that I utilize, I am a tremendous fan of extracts that come from cow kidneys. I'm not going to go into it unless that's really a topic that you're just are licking your lips over and you've got to discuss. But it's one of the greatest ways to strengthen the kidneys and the bladder and the urinary tract.
Okay.
I'm also a fan of what are called thymus extracts, which technically the largest gland of your immune system is the thymus gland.
Okay, I wrote those down.
And the two minerals that I probably like the most, it's not the only ones, it's just two that I'm thinking of, would be zinc and iodine.
Zinc and iodine.
You have too little zinc in your body, you tend to have more infections. Zinc lozenges are almost dirt cheap, if you ask me. I think I can buy them for like $1.25 for a roll of them.
Okay. Try those too.
Somebody else would buy a bag of Rolos or a roll of Rolos. I'll buy a roll of zinc lozenges. I know which ones taste better. The Rolos taste much better.
But the zinc
is
better.
Oh, yes, yes, yeah. It serves very, very well. But if
okay.
You just, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay. I'm just going to say thank you very much. It has given me a lot of direction.
Okay, good deal. Thank you very much,
ma'am.
Okay,
thank you very much.
Uh-huh, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
There is one more technique that I'll discuss with you. It's just the application of coconut oil. I know that's kind of old school, but I am convinced I've seen it benefit women over and over. The number here is 903-586-5257. Good morning. How are you doing this Saturday?
I'm doing good. I have a friend that has diabetes, and she is experiencing lots of neuropathy.
Oh, bless her heart. Mm-hmm.
Do you have anything that might give her a little, feel a little better?
You know, I don't know if you really caught what I said earlier, and I don't expect you to, but the man that called earlier, I was telling him at one end of the seesaw, we've got the hormone called insulin.
Yeah.
At the other end, we have the hormone called growth hormone. And so this is one thing that I read the other day. It said this, and it was a legitimate medical study, but my eyes are like bulging at the seams. I'm going, I wonder if anybody else has read this besides me. It is saying that people that have diabetes that are taking insulin, they can actually develop a heck of a lot more problems than if they didn't take any insulin at all. And I'm just like astonished. I'm going, are you kidding me? And they're saying, yeah, if we compare it to doing nothing, I found two studies that show that there's horrible side effects. The longer that you take insulin, the more problems you develop. Anyway, that's just an idea. Okay. I'm almost certain after you get off the phone, we're going to have an endocrinologist here in East Texas call up and explain to me that that's not correct. But that's fine. I love getting all sorts of different opinions because it gives me a chance to kind of think through things. But in her situation, her insulin levels are too high and she has what's called insulin resistance. That is not what you want, because when you have that, you really don't get much growth hormone. And the last time I checked, growth hormone, it tells your body to heal those nerves and keep them in good working order. But instead, what's happening, the acronym is called AGEs, AGES. It stands for Advanced Glycation End Products. She's got too much of those, and what's happening is she's got too much sugar. It's a little bit too sticky, and it's literally welding or gluing itself to proteins, and they're just lodging in the nerves, and they're just very, very disruptive. So the way that you change all that, actually, let me give you one idea here. There was a recent comparison study where they, and I can't even remember all of them. I think one was the American Heart Association diet for diabetics. The other one, obviously, was the American Diabetes Association diet. And I think there was one like dietitian's diet. But there were 9 basic diets, and they said, and the title of the article really, really intrigued me. It said, what diet reverses diabetes? And I thought to myself, okay, there might be 3 words in here that I want to pay attention to: diet, and then reverse, and then diabetes. And so what would you call a reversal of diabetes? I'd say, well, you go back to the doctor and you have your labs run and you go, you know what, my blood sugar was 267 on a good day and now it's back to 70. I'd call that a reversal of diabetes, especially if you don't need to require. And the word reversal means these folks don't need to take medications any longer because they're healed. They reversed it. Does that sound intriguing to you?
Yes, very.
Well, what they did was they compared the 9 diets that were constructed by healthcare experts. And I'm just going to say it this way. Every one of them was a failure. None of them reversed diabetes. And so my question is, well, why are we recommending them if they don't even work? It's probably an okay question, but diet number 10 did work. You know who came up with diet number 10?
No.
People that said things like this: I'm sick of this. I can't do this any longer. I hate the way I feel when I eat that way. So they came up with their own plan, and here's what just about 400 and something people came together, and this was their plan. They said, I don't care if they tell me to eat 6 meals a day with 2,500 snacks to keep my blood sugar up. It ain't working. So what they did was, they tried a technique called intermittent fasting. And what intermittent fasting means, it means you're not eating food for about 18 hours a day. So what they did was, they totally skipped breakfast. I bet you anything, if I talk to your friend right now that has this neuropathy, and is it a man or a woman?
A woman.
If I asked her, do you feel like eating breakfast at 7 o'clock in the morning? I already know what she's going to say. She's going to say, heavens no. I'm not even remotely hungry. I don't even want to eat till 12 or 1 o'clock. And I'd say, great, do that. That would be against the great medical advice that she's been given. But so when they only ate 2 meals a day, lunch and supper, I think it was more like a early lunch and an early supper, what happened was their blood sugar started going down. And what we've discovered is, or what I think I've discovered is, if you're not eating food for about 18 hours a day, that's called intermittent fasting. And when you're fasting, that's going to cause your insulin levels or your need for insulin to go way, way, way down. Oh, boy, is that advantageous.
Yeah.
See, they can give monkeys in a laboratory all the sugar they want, and guess what happens? They age about 40% faster than the monkeys that are eating just enough to get by, but not too much. 40% faster, they age.
Oh, goodness.
So she doesn't want her body breaking down prematurely, but that's kind of what neuropathy is. So if she restricts her carbohydrates, that's what she's going to do. You know how maddening this is for me sometimes? I'll sit there and I'll have a person explain to me. My endocrinologist tells me to drink Cokes and eat candy and eat donuts and eat all that I want. And what they'll do is they'll just make it easy on me. They'll just adjust the insulin exactly however they want. Well, the problem is, If you want to, have you ever heard the phrase before, that person's burning the candle at both ends?
Yeah.
I mentioned earlier that my father-in-law is a dentist, but he works for a, I guess like a missionary healthcare type clinic where they're trying to provide very inexpensive care to people that just don't have money or insurance. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So he's really doing a good service, but there's a condition that he's told me about called meth mouth. You ever heard of meth mouth?
No.
Well, if you're in the parking lot of a large grocery store slash, I started to say a mart, that you probably never heard of Walmart before, have you?
No, never.
I didn't think so. You're not sophisticated like I am. But if you're there and you see somebody acting really strange and bizarre, and they're like hyperactive and twitching and jerking, and they're moving real fast and talking fast, and you see them smile and they have almost all their teeth are rotten, well, that's what methamphetamines do.
Okay.
And so, yeah, that's just a great plan. You take methamphetamines and you don't sleep for 3 days straight or even 4 days straight. You don't need to sleep. You just stay up and you do stuff. Okay, but what you do is you burn your body out too quick.
Okay.
So if you ever see a person that says, "Hi, my name's Ralph. I'm 20 years old," but they look like they're 80, there's a good chance they've really abused methamphetamines.
All right.
Because it just burns you up too quickly. And so the high level of insulin, it'll do it also. It'll burn through almost everything too quick. I have probably about 400 stories I could probably pull off the top of my head where a person had out-of-control type 1 diabetes and they died when they were 35 or 42 or 40 or 39 or 38. But, I mean, those happen on a yearly basis. I get to hear several of them, usually from other very caring people like you. So if she were to consider two meals a day, basically based on meat and vegetables probably, kind of like a ketogenic diet or a paleo diet or a slow-carb diet or a low-carb diet, there's lots of ways of saying it. But what you're doing is you're just trying to get the body in a mode to heal and repair itself. Next thing is, a guy walks up to me and says, "Hey, do you take insurance?" And I said, "Nope." Anyway, he's telling me, he said, "Can you do anything for neuropathy?" And I said, "Well, what would happen if you lose weight?" He says, "It's funny you brought that up, because every time I lose weight, my neuropathy starts to go away." I'm going, "That's because we're lowering insulin, and we're lowering blood sugar, and we're increasing growth hormone and testosterone, and we're lowering cortisol. So all this stuff has already been worked out. It's just a matter if the type of physician you go to wants to spend time." Have you ever heard the phrase before that a physician cannot treat that which he does not know?
Yes.
Because if you say, "Doctor, what's your plan to reverse my neuropathy?" And he goes, "Well, it's medically impossible. It can't be done. I'm going to recommend that you take lots of Lyrica and Neurontin, and then we're going to give you massive doses of gabapentin to kind of kill the pain. But none of those do anything in their mechanism to reverse the problem. None of them do. They're just expensive drugs that kind of destroy the body, and they don't fix anything."
Oh, interesting.
See, I would love a pain specialist to call me on the phone right now. And I'll leave the phone number is 903-586-5257. And I'd like him to explain all the reversals of neuropathy and nerve pain that he's seen with gabapentin.
Oh.
When I say reversal, that means healing. And so your friend is going to heal if she can discipline herself. All these things require discipline.
Okay.
Have you ever been at a point in your life where you go, "I just can't continue doing this. I've got to make a change"?
Yes.
It always involves discipline, doesn't it?
Exactly, yes.
Is discipline hard to do?
Very.
It is for me.
We always revert back to what we want to do rather than the discipline.
Are you reading my mail? Do you have a spy camera watching me all day long? Yeah, and it is, and but I know God calls us to be disciplined, and we've got to continually choose, what am I going to do with my life?
To get better. Yeah.
You know what? If I'm being honest, I really feel like I haven't even come close to reaching my full potential, and I realize I am the last person that I want to talk about on the radio. I'm just saying, if I'm being honest, I know that I can do better. I know that I can continually strive for excellence. And I've got a lot of room for improvement. But at least I realize that, and I welcome the opportunity to continually learn and improve how I do things.
Exactly.
But then again, that makes life very interesting and exciting, if you ask me.
Well, it should. To feel better would be very exciting.
Yeah, you're right about that. It is exciting to feel better because when you feel good, oh, my word, you can get up and do stuff, right?
Right, right. Yes, yes. Well, thank you so very
yes,
much.
Yes, ma'am.
I will pass this along, and thank you for your program and all you do.
Oh, you're just the best with your compliments. You're very sweet and kind and generous. Thank you, and I hope you have a great day.
Thanks.
You're welcome. Bye. Bye-bye. All right, we have about, I'm going to say 12 to 13 minutes, depending on when the program ends. 903-586-5257. By the way, I am not trying to be critical against antibiotics. I'm not. If you have double pneumonia and you're about to die, we better get you. I'll drive you to the hospital myself. I will. If you have a massive abscess tooth and it's about to get to your heart and eat it, I'll take you to the dentist personally. That's your cure. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Hi.
How are you, ma'am?
I'm good.
Well, I'm really glad you called today.
Thank you. I'm glad I got through. My question is, we were talking about neuropathy, right? I have peripheral neuropathy with no signs of diabetes. In fact, I have low blood sugar, if any. And I was on 3,600 milligrams of gabapentin for many years. And I was healed. God healed me. I haven't had that, take that in over a year.
Wow,
but,
I love it.
Yes, sir. But I've noticed that on my toes, I've got some necrosis.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, what can I do to treat that before? I mean, it's just starting. They're purple. They're just barely purple. But what can I do to reverse that?
Are you sure you want to ask a weirdo like me what to do about that?
Yeah.
No, what you need is you got to have more oxygen.
Okay.
And so if a person has really thick toenails, if they have toenail fungus, I always interpret those as low oxygen in the body. I'm not trying to be critical. I just want to improve oxygen. Oxygen may be the universal healer. And so what we're going to find is you don't have diabetic neuropathy where you're having these advanced glycation improgs welding themselves to the cell, but you can have something else. It's an equal opportunity condition. It means you could have literally low levels of oxygen. So I'm going to do my crazy talk just for a second here, all right? And if I lose you, please forgive me. I read an article this morning, and I don't have it right in front of me, but to me it was very, very fascinating. It was on the topic of dementia. Now, I'm not saying you have dementia, but I think I have a couple of close personal friends that if they don't straighten up, they're going to get it. So that would not be fun. But your body requires certain substances. Well, let me start over. Would you agree with me that your blood is one of the most interesting transportation delivery systems that we have in the body? It carries food and oxygen to every cell in the body, right?
Right.
Even those little bitty cells that you have down there at the very tip of your toe that are starting to turn purple. So all you would benefit greatly if you had a buddy that had a hyperbaric oxygen chamber and they cranked it up to about 5 atmospheres of oxygen. You would say, oh, my word, 20 treatments later, my toes aren't even purple at all. Oh, that's what oxygen does. Well, I think I like oxygen. I want some. But in the real world, you probably don't have a friend that has a hyperbaric oxygen chamber, do you?
No.
So in the meantime, here's what you've got. You want to consume a low-carbohydrate diet because anytime that you increase carbohydrates, they just tie up all your oxygen. And another way of saying this is when you eat sugar, your body's going to break that down into carbon dioxide and water every single time. There's no way around it. It's just basic biochemistry. And so if you're eating more carbohydrates than what you'd like to have, then you're just going to have dirty blood. And when your blood is just thick and dirty, full of carbon dioxide, you're not going to have a lot of room for oxygen.
Right.
Do you think any of that could be a possibility?
Yes.
Okay, number two then. Let's just move on. Magnesium has been shown to increase the oxygen delivery throughout the body. Can I tell you the one recommendation I've given people? I have had more criticism from their cardiologist than probably any other single suggestion. If I recommend the herb called hawthorn, I'm telling you, the patients come back and says, my doctor says you're nuts, you shouldn't be doing this, he thinks that you're going to kill me by giving me hawthorn. I'm going, would you just look at the study right here, read this. Do you think that's true, or do you think that I'm making that up? But hawthorn is one of the most interesting herbs when you're trying to improve the quality of the blood and its ability to transport oxygen to your little pinky toes. So I'm in love with that. Now, here's my big sales pitch for you. This article that I read this morning was talking about dementia, and it was saying, and I realize I'm kind of going far off away from where you were talking about, but I'm really right in the same pathway with you. You know how if you were to go to a doctor and they'd say, you know what, you haven't been in 1 year, we need to do a lipid profile. We're going to measure your total cholesterol, triglycerides, LDL, HDL, VLDL, stuff like that. And that's all good. I'm okay with that. But there's one particular test that they can order that's been shown to be 40 times more accurate than a cholesterol profile. 40 times. And this research has been around since the late 1970s. But you know what? I just about never see anybody order this test because it doesn't kind of fit their narrative. And let me tell you what that is. It's a test called homocysteine. You ever heard of homocysteine?
Yes.
Okay. Guess what the narrative is? Your body requires sufficient amounts of B vitamins to keep homocysteine in check. Now, you got to admit, that's a whole different story than you need to take Lipitor. You need to take... are you taking a statin drug by chance?
No.
Are you taking thyroid medication?
No, sir.
Are you taking any drugs?
No, I had a heart attack when I was 37, and they gave me a fistful, and I stayed on them for several years, but through prayer and just absolute God, I have been medication-free now for over a year.
I'm going to suggest to you that if you have gangrene in the toes, you have a very, very severe B vitamin deficiency.
Okay.
And the good news is there's nothing I can do to harm you by telling you to consume B vitamins.
Right.
When's the last time you read in the Tyler Morning Telegraph or the Courier Times or whatever it is, 10 patients came to the ER between 6 and 7 a.m. suffering massive symptoms from B vitamin overdose. Ha ha, ha ha ha, that doesn't happen. And so
right.
If you tell me you want to start consuming nutritional yeast every day, there's a good source of B vitamins right there. I would venture a guess, out of all the B vitamin, now I'm going to tell you a story from yesterday. It's not going to make me look too smart, but I'm telling you what happened. I'm being honest with you. A woman came to see me, and she said, I just feel exhausted. I feel horrible. I can't get it together. I can't think. I've got these weird aches and pains. Now, what I did was, when I examined her, according to my testing technique, she tested to have a B vitamin deficiency, and I tried to demonstrate that to her, and she said, okay. And what I did was I probably got a little bit overly enthusiastic because I just assume everybody's going to do everything I say. Anyway, but I gave her natural B vitamins that came from calf heart and calf liver. And here's what happened. She said, when I would take the dose that you gave me, I experienced nausea for about 2 hours. I didn't like that. Now, nobody else has told me that this week, just her. But I believe her. But she said, later in the day, though, I felt amazing. This is the best that I've felt in forever. I can't even tell you. Now, let me tell you what I did. When you start giving natural B vitamins, all of a sudden the liver is going to be able to start filtering impurities from the blood that it hasn't been able to do before. And so the moment I gave her those, what she's probably started experiencing is the body's just probably dealing with an overflow of toxins that she couldn't get rid of, and it made her nauseated. So, yeah, that's legitimate. But see, she played the other side of the equation, too. She said, this is the best that I have felt. I felt amazing. But we need rejuvenation, and that's why I'm recommending natural B vitamins. But a lot of the ones I use, they just come from calf liver. I'm not a huge fan of synthetic B vitamins. Now, let me play it a little bit further. There's only one vitamin that your body holds in reserve. It's called vitamin B12. You don't get that from vegetables. I mean, you do get some forms of it from vegetables, but they don't work in the human body worth a flip. You got to get it from an animal source. So when you eat eggs or tuna fish or liver and onions for lunch today, which is my recommendation to you, you're going to be getting a boatload of B vitamins. But
right.
But the other B vitamins, you can't store them. literally, with this necrosis that you have in your foot, you're burning through your nutrients at a faster rate. Now, I want God to heal you, but I want you to use the smarts that God gave you also and be a good steward and take good care of yourself, right?
Yeah.
So, if you cut out sugar and you start taking B vitamins, if I could convince you to start walking barefoot in the grass every day, you'll start to see a reversal of all this.
Okay.
I'd probably try to get you enrolled in yoga class. Just talk to Lori or Lucy. They'll get you signed right up over at Christus and Mother Francis.
Right.
Plus, those yoga instructors, they'll do anything that I say. If I call them and say, I want you to push this lady harder than she's ever been pushed before, they'll do it. No, they're extremely compassionate and kind and sweet. So, okay. Anyway, just consider those things, but you need to start rubbing castor oil all over your foot. Do not go to bed ever again unless you have a sock drenched in castor oil on your foot. Don't do it. Take advantage of castor oil. It's going to radically increase circulation. Now, the other recommendation, and this is, I think this could be a brilliant one. Now, are you married?
Yeah.
I want your husband to breathe his hot breath after he eats garlic on your foot. That'll bring it back to life right there. You know that vampires can't stand garlic, right?
Right.
I'm just joking. You know what happened yesterday when I was driving home from Tyler? I was listening to three kids talk in the back seat of my pickup, and one of them said, Noli, I want you to open your mouth and breathe on me. I thought, what? And then she started saying, let me smell your breath. I just thought... Really, I said, when we get home, you can ask Penny, who's our rat terrier. I said, why don't you smell her breath? And they just all started laughing. Anyway.
So funny thing you said, vampire. I'm a phlebotomist.
Well, you get to see interesting things all day long, don't you?
Yes, very much so.
Is there a chance that your body's a little bit too sedentary?
Yes, because I drive probably 1,300 miles a week.
Is that for life insurance?
No, it's to draw it from nursing homes.
Oh, okay, I got you. I'm with you. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Well, you're doing a great service. Keep it up, kiddo.
Well, thank you.
I want you to start walking barefoot. Now, you have to understand, I'm not picking on you, but my dad was a pretty heavy cigarette smoker. But there is nothing that'll suck oxygen out of your blood like cigarettes will.
I know.
So nobody's picking on you. Everybody loves you.
Well, thank you.
Well,
I appreciate you.
Well, you're welcome. You have a great day, and I hope you have a good travel today to your next nursing home.
Yes, sir. Thanks
so much. Bye-bye. All right, you're listening to Health Essentials on KBGS, Jacksonville, Tyler, Longview.